for many people, when they hit midlife, they realize I could be doing anything I want. I do not have to follow the rules, path, and socialization that I grew up with. I'm compelled in many ways to actually not to desocialize myself, but to come back home to myself instead.
Welcome to the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. In this podcast, I will guide you on your journey to connect with the true source of your self-worth. Each week, we'll discuss barriers to unconditional self-worth, the connection between self-worth and relationships, self-worth practices you can apply to your life, and how to use self-worth as a foundation for living courageously. I'm your host, Dr. Adia Gooden, a licensed clinical psychologist, dance enthusiast, and a dark chocolate lover who believes deeply that you are worthy unconditionally.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. I have a very insightful and thoughtful episode that I'm bringing to you today. My guest name is Julie Artis, and we actually met back in the day when I was in graduate school. She was a committee member on my master's thesis. And now we're both in this world of coaching. She's still in academia, but she coaches women on in their midlife on up-leveling their careers. And we really have a thoughtful and insightful conversation about midlife and the challenges that come with midlife and the opportunities that come. And, you know, if you are listening and you are in midlife, you are certainly going to find this incredibly valuable. And if you are not in midlife, you're also going to want to listen to this episode because a lot of what we talk about relates to life transitions and all of the things that can come up, all of the opportunities that we have when we are going through any given life transition. So it's a really thoughtful and insightful conversation, and I know you're going to get so much out of it. So let's get into the show. I am really excited to welcome Julie Artis onto the podcast today. Julie is a published expert on women's work and midlife transitions. She has 10 years of coaching experience and has been teaching at the university level for over 25 years. That's actually how we know each other. And Julie is grateful to help professional women who want to uplevel their career and life so they can confidently share their unique awesomeness with their families and the world. Personally, Julie is embracing her 50s as a divorced mom of two great and yes, sometimes infuriating teens. Her own midlife story is still in progress, but every day she makes progress in becoming more and more herself. When she's not teaching or coaching, she's an avid, maybe obsessive, maker who taught herself to knit, sew, and weave. Recently, she started to dabble in woodworking and vegetable gardening. So Julie and I know each other because when I was a graduate student at DePaul, she was a committee member on my master's thesis. So we had to, you know, get somebody who's not in our department to be on our committee. And I think my advisor, Susan McMahon, recommended Julie. And were you in the sociology department?
I'm in sociology.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So Julie was in the sociology department. My master's thesis was on attitudes and affiliations with gangs for like African-American adolescents. So anyway, Julie agreed graciously because she didn't know me to be on my committee. And then, you know, we've like reconnected on LinkedIn all of these years later. And it's so fun to kind of connect around our outside of academia lives.
Totally. It's so funny because I remember, you know, you have a unique name. And so I remember seeing your name and being like, I remember what room we were in. I remember what you wore. I remember that you gave a really good presentation. You gave a great presentation. Thanks. So it is not surprising to me that you have a podcast and you're speaking in public and doing all this. It's so exciting to reconnect.
Oh, thank you. That's so fun. I'm like, I have no idea what I was wearing, but I'm glad it was memorable. So I'd love to start our conversation where I start all of our conversations with guests on the podcast, which is by asking you to share a little bit about your own self-worth journey.
Oh boy. Wow. Self-worth journey. So I think, you know, a lot of the way that I got self-worth as a child and into young adulthood was through being good in school, right? Mm-hmm. I was a good student. I knew how to get good grades. I got into a great university. I got into a great PhD program. I mean, I was climbing that ladder like nobody's business without any trouble. I got a tenure track job right out of PhD. So there's a lot of these externally recognized sort of markers that were external to me and to my inside self. That was how I felt I was worth something and on the right track. And then I got tenure and had kids and became chair of my department. And somewhere within this 5-year period in my late 30s, early 40s, all of that went to hell. Right. So I don't know. I just, the external thing wasn't working anymore, especially as chair of a department where you're supposed to be leading, inspiring, but also holding people accountable for their work. And I found that incredibly uncomfortable as somebody who had relied for the most part on external markers of my own self-worth. So that began a long journey of my 40s and my early 50s, but until now, of starting to shift my identity more inward and rely a little bit more on who am I, who are all the parts of me, being willing to show all of the parts of me and not just segment them, right? Because that's, I think, what sometimes happens is if you're not truly feeling worthy, you start, I'm just going to show my academic crowd this part and my family this part. And I think in midlife, that often regularly falls apart.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think a lot of people will resonate with your experience. I resonate with it. For me, it sort of like fell apart sooner, but I think we'll resonate with the, like, I followed all the things. I did all of the things. Right. And then you get to this sort of breaking point where it's no longer working, right? And chair of the department, it's like, you're no longer, like, everybody's no longer going to just think you're always doing an amazing job, right? Like, that's, you know, in that type of role, people are going to be upset with you. You're going to have to make some decisions that people don't like, right? Like, it pulls you out of the, like, just do a good job and get the grade and, you know, get the whatever. Yeah. And so it makes sense that at that sort of leadership role where you think you're sort of like at this ideal, you've made it to this place, that that's when it sort of falls apart. And I also appreciate you sharing the, like, the compartmentalizing, like, I will manage how other people see me because I don't trust that if they saw all of me, they would still love me, accept me, approve of me. So I'm going to hide these feelings or hide this part of me and just sort of like show a little bit, show just enough. But yeah, it makes sense that as you get sort of into more of living, right? That it just like wouldn't work, like that it would be exhausting to keep it up, that it would feel unfulfilling, that it would feel frustrating. And it makes sense that that's a place where you're like, okay, I got to do something different. Will you talk about what it's looked and felt like for you to start like making a shift and start doing something different?
Oh, sure. Let's see. I think, so after I was chair, for 5 years, I had an opportunity to move into central administration at DePaul and enrollment management and marketing, still doing some nerdy data stuff, but more focused on student success and some operations side of things, making sure students got the classes they need when they got them. This was awesome for me because it wasn't really a managerial role, but it was, I'm one of those people, and I've come to learn that this is one of my strengths. I'm a good translator in between. Like, if you think about a typical university, the academic faculty side versus the administrative what faculty would call bean counter side, right? So like I was able to like sort of consistently translate back and forth and mm-hmm. communicate and build this bridge between these two sides to greater and lesser success in different ways and all of that. But I did that for several years. And that was really the beginning of me defining or leaning into what I realized hadn't really quite got there before that I was good at, right? Mm. And so that was a big deal for me at work. I also had a great boss who really let me, like, I had something I was working on, but then he involved me in other projects and then I would work on those. And I just feel like I was able to, it's like an academic, like I was able to do these different projects that I was super interested in. But I was able to do them in a team and with a very clear mm-hmm. sort of benefit that was constant to the students in the university. And I really, really enjoyed that. Personally, at the same time, around the same time, I went through a divorce. Mm. And so, of course, that is like, talk about shaking things up in midlife, right? That was a huge change and a huge identity shift that I had to go through as well. I started leaning more on friends and all of, you know, specific friends and really trying to hone in on people that really resonated with me and who I was becoming as a result of this major change in my personal life. And that it was hard. I mean, I was separated, then went through, then got divorced, then had a dear friend pass away from cancer and then COVID hit like 1 year. 18, 19, 20. And, you know, which also corresponds politically with not a happy moment in our country. And I, you know, it's just been a real roller coaster, not just for me, but for everyone. And at the same time that all this stuff is happening up here and all this external stuff, it's like, all it's creating all these like internal shifts for me inside. And having to get really, really clear on what mattered to me, right? Having to make decisions about where I would live, my kids, like how I was going to navigate things with my ex and how my family would look moving forward, how we would work together as co-parents, you know? So there was a lot of change.
Yeah,
personally and professionally for me in that like sort of last 5 years of my 40s. And then the pandemic hit. And then I was like, this is great. I can like work from home, craft a lot. You know what I mean? Get into all kinds of trouble, like just doing my own thing. I don't know. Like I felt like in some sense, I mean, it was obviously so stressful and so terrifying and so horrifying in many ways, but I'm an introvert and I like to do things around the house. And I kind of leaned into that and I'd always wanted to have a garden. And so I was like, if I'm going to have a garden, this is the summer to have a garden. I mean, since grad school, like I had a book about gardening and I'd never had a garden since I was a 2-year-old, I wanted to have a dog. Never had a dog.
Oh, wow.
Got a COVID dog in October of 20, right? And so there were these little things that I started doing that were, that on the outside might not seem like that big of a deal, but that internally to me were like these, me expressing outward as opposed to people pushing inward.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like, you know, all of the change and the challenges that you were going through personally was, first of all, very clarifying, right? It's like this forced clarity because it's like, okay, we got to figure out what really matters. And then the, you know, pandemic with all its challenges allowed you the space and the slowness to lean into some of the things that you'd probably just been putting off because there wasn't enough time. There wasn't enough, you know what I mean? Like you had the commute or you had whatever. And so like allowed you to say, well, what do I want to do with this time if I'm not commuting or I don't have to, you know, be in the office or getting my work done more efficiently or whatever. And I think it's wonderful that you were able to sort of lean into that and say, well, this is what I want. I want a dog. I want a garden. I want these things. Because I think the other thing that the pandemic did do is just like, okay, we got to live now, right? Like it sort of connected us more clearly to our mortality and the reality of our mortality, the truth of it. And like, okay, you know, like we got to do this now. Not 5 years from now, not one day, but like, let's create the time and the space to kind of live the life we want to live now.
Yeah. And I think the other thing was that it was the pandemic and the space, but it was also that I was single, right? So I didn't have this other person living in the house to sort of influence how I was going to be spending that time. And I mean, that would have been in a good marriage or a bad marriage or whatever. I think it just like living together that much would have, if I had still been married, would have brought up similar issues. But I do think that there is this kind of bizarre gift of having to go figure out what I wanted to do with that time, not me with somebody else.
Real talk. The relationship that you probably neglect the most is actually the most important relationship in your life. I'm talking about your relationship with yourself. Your relationship with yourself is the foundation of your life. When your relationship with yourself is riddled with self-criticism, you play small, you settle for toxic relationships, and you'll struggle to take care of yourself. In contrast, when you build a healthy relationship with yourself, you will go to bed at night feeling good about yourself and what you've accomplished for the day. You'll feel energized in the morning and ready to confidently pursue your goals, knowing you got this. You'll tell yourself it's not the end of the world when you make a mistake instead of obsessing about it for days on end. And you'll know exactly how to take care of yourself so that it feels good on the inside and out. This is exactly the reality that my course, Date Yourself, 4 weeks to a Healthy Relationship with You, helps you to create. This course guides you step by step to get rid of self-criticism, practice self-compassion, and take good care of yourself so you can finally get the love and respect you deserve. To learn more and enroll now, go to www.unconditionallyworthy.com/date-yourself. I guess I'm curious about whether there are some things that come up for people in midlife that sort of force us to sort of look at like, what do I really want? Right? Like you probably, maybe not, like we're, you know, having kids later and later these days, but like you probably don't have, like I have an 8-month-old. It's like very demanding of my time, right? So I don't have as much to be like, well, what should I do in my free time? Right? There's not really that space right now. But I know that as my daughter gets older, right, like there will be more space. And I wonder if, you know, some of your expertise is coaching women in midlife, but I wonder if you think that there are things that midlife brings up that sort of like causes people to sort of face and look at like how they're living, what they really want in a way that's different in other developmental stages. And I'd love for you to just talk a little bit about that.
Oh, absolutely. Sure. There's a wonderful essay by Brené Brown about this, where she talks, I forget what it's called, on midlife. It's very short. It's on her website. It's not in any of her books, but it is this reckoning when you realize you're halfway through your life. And when you said the pandemic brings you closer to mortality, when you get into your late 40s, it brings you like you're also brought closer to your mortality, not just because you're thinking about your own, but because suddenly you have friends who start to get ill, right? Or you lose a parent, which brings you closer to understanding that that's you know, this is, life is about these cycles of life and death. You're absolutely right. My kids at the beginning of the pandemic, it's so funny. They were 9th grade and 7th grade. And I remember like getting them in the kitchen and being like, I will make dinner and I will get whatever you want for breakfast and lunch, but I am not making them. They learned how to do laundry over the pandemic. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There were these, mm-hmm. It was a very interesting time, but you're right. Having a little one under 5 doesn't allow for that time and space. So yeah, I had my kids a little bit later, but now I have a senior and a sophomore in high school, and there is this open time. And coincidentally for me, that happened at the moment of my divorce when I can leave my kids by themselves and go to do something with friends. I don't have to arrange for childcare. It was almost exactly the same time. And so what's weird for me is like, I have a hard time parsing those two things out because they happened at the same time for me. I was completely maxed out. I mean, not just with like sort of a troubled situation in the marriage, but like maxed out just from work and kids and just having all kinds of things going on. We always needed a sitter or somebody to pick them up. And then this sort of year of transition with the divorce, and then this odd sense of freedom and having time. Mm. And I think you're absolutely right that those moments that are either, I mean, we know a lot from the, you know, sociology and social psychology research about the impact of transitions, right? So if we think about transitions as being major markers in people's lives, midlife serves them up and a lot, right? So you might have empty nest, divorce, death of a parent, death of a sibling. I mean, it goes on and on and on. And with all of those, there's like layered stressors. There's work stressors too that are beside that. Yeah. And I think it becomes this moment of, what am I going to do and not going to do anymore? So there's this stress component, but then there is this component of having a little bit more time, I think, if you've had children. Mm-hmm. And so you have to... But then you are facing mortality, either because, I mean, for me, it was because I had lost a really, really dear friend she was 49. And I just thought, what am I doing? You know, what am I doing from now and here on out? And I think the years since then, including the years in the pandemic, which only amplified that, and some of the changes that I've made and the practices I've engaged in and the things that I'm working on are explicitly about that new North Star, in a sense.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's coming up for me as you share is in a culture that avoids the fact that we age, right? And is sort of obsessed with looking younger, appearing younger, right? Like we live in an ageist culture where aging isn't seen as you have more wisdom. It's not seen as valuable. It's like, it's seen as like, avoid it, don't show it, hide it, right? And there's not really, I think, thoughtful conversations that happen in the public sphere about how do you age gracefully? What are the different challenges that you might be experiencing? How do you move into a different stage, you know, with gratitude and blah, 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 blah. That I imagine so many people, when they're entering midlife, sort of as you're sharing, are really caught off guard by all that it brings up and kind of like don't know where to turn or how to navigate, right? Like we have this like, oh, they're having a midlife crisis. They're having a midlife crisis, right? That's really like the only way you hear like midlife. It's like a midlife crisis, right? But we don't talk about like, well, what's behind it? Like what might cause someone to have sort of a crisis of identity or like, oh my gosh, everything's going to hell, or, Yeah. You know, like, I'm no longer happy in this career that I've spent, you know, two decades building or whatever, right? And it's like, it's all of these things that you're mentioning, but because we don't talk about it, people are caught off guard and then overwhelmed and in a crisis instead of like, okay, I'm experiencing new challenges as I navigate this new phase and stage of my life. Because as you're saying, like, we don't have, there's not really clear markers of the transition. Of like, okay, now you're entering this phase of midlife, right? Like, there's sort of clearer markers of like, you turn 21, you turn 18, you turn 21, right? Like, you turn, right? Like, or you get married. Like, there's these sort of other things, but I feel like midlife is sort of like, when does it happen? When is it happening?
Right. But I think that's exactly what it is. So I think for many people, when they hit midlife, they realize, I could be doing anything I want. Mm. I do not have to follow the rules, path, and socialization that I grew up with. I'm compelled in many ways to actually not to desocialize myself, but to come back home to myself instead, right? So that I'm actually really paying attention to what I want, not what society tells me I should want. And so you're right. There's both a lack of external guidance, but I also think that, like, as you were talking, I'm like, no, but that's what it's all about. That's part of the crisis, is that there are no guideposts. Mm-hmm. There are only choice points that are scary because they involve paths that may not have been trodden before. And they're scary because it means, do I still belong? If I follow this kind of calling that I'm really feeling pulled toward, this is what I need to be doing.
Yeah.
What am I going to lose? Like, financially, socially, I mean, family-wise, and status-wise. I mean, it could be all of the above. Identity-wise, I'm still, you know, I'm still a professor. I'm still at the university, and I'm working on this coaching, which has been amazing. And I do feel like is my second chapter calling. But that's a little scary for me to even say publicly, right? Because I have invested all this time in this career. I do love a lot of the work that I've done and that my colleagues have done in sociology. I love it as a topic. And I feel like it's time for me to apply that in a different arena. Like, just this conversation about midlife is like making my brain explode because it's... Right? Because it is basically an intellectual conversation about one's life course and where there are clear markers and where there are not, and then how that intersects with each individual person. And then what happens? And then, see, now I'm thinking even bigger, like, we not have something about midlife because on average, we died younger 100 years ago. So there was, in effect, no midlife. There was adulthood and then death. Like, we skipped the midlife part, right? Yeah. So there's no actual definition for it. So I don't know. I think there's some interesting questions that this all brings up and is why people feel so in crisis and empty in many ways at this moment.
And you said this, which is like, people are scared of what they're going to lose. And I think that's true. And I think it's so important to be honest about, like, you may lose approval, acceptance, you may lose identity, role. And I think the biggest loss is losing yourself, right? And I think that's what we have to, like, help people have in perspective, right? Like, you might lose some of these external things that you worked so hard for, that you thought were going to, you know, in my world, make you feel worthy, that you thought were going to make you happy. And you're now at a period where you're looking around and you're saying, this doesn't make me happy. This doesn't make me feel worthy. This doesn't, you know, fulfill me, you know, and what am I going to do? Right. And so there is sort of the, like, you could keep doing it. Right. And then you won't lose and other people will be happy because you're not rocking the boat. You're not changing, you know, how you show up in their lives. But what you may really lose is yourself and what you want and what you need. And I think the challenge is that people often fear that if they focus and prioritize themselves, that's selfish. I think especially women, right? Like that's the sort of lie that we've been sold. But the truth is that when you focus on yourself, it actually better enables you to show up for other people, right? To show up as a mom, as a partner, to show up, you know, as a parent, to show up in your job, right? Like it actually is the best foundation for showing up and not showing up while you're overextending yourself and overdoing it and burning out and getting irritated and resentful and all these things, but showing up in a way that actually, you know, feels invigorating and exciting and impactful.
Yeah. No, it's so true. I, you know, it's the same thing. Even when I think about going through my divorce, I remember worrying that deciding to go ahead and separate and get divorced, because we were actually had a fairly amicable split and everything like that, that maybe we should just stay together for a few more years for the kids. Like, I don't know. Like, you know, there was some conversation about that. And it's the same thing with my job. Maybe I should keep working, you know, for a few more. Maybe I should put this dream of coaching women to become like confident in their careers, in their leadership roles, in their lives, in their families, and take these kinds of essentially courageous steps toward themselves, becoming more of who they really are, and owning that they are worthy, not because somebody else says that it's true, but because it is true.
Yes.
Because they are worthy. They were worthy. We're all worthy, right? We're all worthy. There's no condition for worthiness, as we are taught. So I feel like one of the difficult questions there is, and something that I've learned a lot from our, one of my favorite podcasts, which is of course the Glennon Doyle, you know, Amanda Melton, like the We Can Do Hard Things podcast, where she talks a lot about what example would, if my child were in the same situation that I'm in, my daughter specifically, what would I want for them? Would I want them to stay in a situation where they're not 100% happy? Would I want them to keep working at a job that didn't defer and put away a dream? Absolutely not. But then we do it to ourselves.
Right.
And I'm like, what is that about? And, you know, and I've thought about that just over and over and over again through these years, because it does seem selfish, right? Sometimes you hear the voice like, what are you doing? You know? And I think really it's about learning to love yourself and give yourself the permission to follow your own heart or your own path, in the same way that you would want your children to do. And so you're setting an example. And that's what I hope I'm able to do. I mean, of course, my teenagers are like, you're starting a podcast? Nobody listens to podcasts anymore. I'm like, you're 16 and 18. Pipe down. You know what I mean? Like,
and not my target audience.
Yeah, you are totally not my target audience. It's so fun. But no, but seriously, like it is about wanting to demonstrate for them that it doesn't matter how old you are, right? You can change.
Yeah. I love that, because, you know, I get people who come to me and they say, I feel embarrassed that I am 40, 50, 60, whatever, and I'm still struggling with self-worth challenges. Like, I feel like I should have figured it out by now. And it's like, how? Right? Like, we don't live in a culture that affirms that you are unconditionally worthy at all. Right? Nope. Like, who would have taught you? How would you have figured it out on your own? That's why I'm so passionate about like what I teach and coach and share on, because there aren't models for this, right? And usually, often people have to go through the like trying all the other external things before they're even ready to say, okay, this isn't working. Let me look at something different. Like, let me figure out how to, you know, as Brené Brown says, belong to myself. Let me figure out how to own my own worth, because these other things, they're not working. And I think that this sort of period is like, is such a great time to be looking at it. And it's also like, I think also we're talking about, it's like when you have the space, the mental and emotional space, because as we know, right, like we talk about Maslow's hierarchy of needs, but when you're struggling for shelter or financial support or all of these things, like you don't have the space to consider like, what is it that I truly desire and what life would I like to create? Right. Like that's just not like where you're able to,
it's a privilege question to ask. Yeah, that's right. It's a privilege.
Yes.
It is a privilege to be able to do that.
I agree. I agree.
Yeah.
I would love for you to share. So for people listening who are like, you know what? Like, I do want to start making some shifts. Maybe it's making shifts in their career, making shifts in their life to be more sort of centered with what they want to be. You know, you use this term to up-level their career. And I think I'm assuming slash pretty sure I know that doesn't mean like you're just going to work harder, right? Like, or you're just going to work for more people's approval.
Right.
But I'd love for you to share like, what does that look like? What wisdom do you have for people who are like, yeah, I do want to use this opportunity for where I am in my life, reflecting and wanting to make some shifts? How do you encourage people to start to do that?
Well, I think there's a few different ways to start. And it's, you know, it's interesting. I have this amazing group of friends from college. There are 10 of us. And we've stayed in touch for over 30 years. And in fact, I'm going to get to see them in a week and a half. Yeah. Most of them are on the East Coast. There's one here in Chicago with me. But we, during the pandemic, we Zoomed every other week and, you know, it just, or every week, I guess, because we had nothing else to do. And it kind of made us all closer. And I don't know. One of the things that I'm realizing, because we all graduated the same year. We all turned 50 during the pandemic. And so I'm realizing that there are people that are they're in their work and they're happy enough, right? And it's because they have these other parts of their life that really turn them on, right? One of my friends is, you know, happy with her work. But she loves traveling. So she travels all the time with her family. You know, another friend is an empty nester. Sort of the same thing, right? Just using this as an opportunity. So these are people that I would not define as having gone through a crisis. And maybe they were closer to their own sense of self than I was. And so I kind of say that at the outset, because I don't think that everyone goes through, well, first off, midlife crisis, look it up, psychologist. there's a little article. It came from this like psychologist in the 60s, a male psychologist who studied a handful of male creatives. And then came up with this idea that, or stage that they went through. And he termed it a midlife crisis, but then it caught, right? So for me, I think, yes, midlife has its challenges and crises. And some people are closer to their own worth and who they are already. And maybe it's because they went through it younger. Maybe it was because their family of origin is different. Maybe it was that the job that they happen to get happens to match up really well with their identity and what they're passionate about. And then there are others who really aren't. So I think one thing, the first thing is like, who are you? Like, where are you on that continuum of like, and it's almost like I would take stock of all the different areas of your life, family, work, finances, you know, where you live. Are you stimulated intellectually? Like, kind of like, where is it that you really feel depleted or that things aren't working as well? So I usually only get people coming to me when they're really not happy with some form of something in their life, right? So it could be they're burnt out because they've been working too much and they need help with that. It could be they're really wanting to totally switch careers. It could be that they you know, want to go for a promotion. So there's all different, or make a lateral move. They're worried because they haven't put together a resume in 20 years, like how that's going to work and everything. So I think the kinds of questions that people should ask themselves is to start there. Like, what arena do I really, I really in a moment where I feel like I need assistance and help? And the second thing is, if people are like, okay, like, I feel like I don't have a passion. Cause I think that's where, you know, like there's all this general stuff out there about like, I don't know what my purpose is. I feel like I don't have a passion project. And I get where that's coming from, but I think it's so vague in the culture, the sort of, I don't know, self-improvement kind of arenas, that it's really, really important to pin that down, right? So there's a few different ways to do that. There are two I'll mention here that I've used to great success with different people that I've worked with. One of them is I did this myself and I feel like I manifested that enrollment management job. Like I took a piece of paper and I had read about this somewhere, but I marked it off for decades of my life in my, you know, 0 to 10, 10 to 20, 20 to 30, 30 to 40. And I just wrote out like, what was I into? What were my passions? What did I love doing? Right? Like, what was my favorite book? What was my favorite movie? Like, what was I obsessed with? I kind of have an obsessive, like kind of curious personality. And it didn't occur to me until I had put some of the pieces together that I really love this intersection between data and communicate, like complicated things and communicating about complicated things. And so I think what can happen is you have this internal narrative that you tell about your path. And then when you're ending up in this place where you're maybe not so happy, what can be really helpful is like going through photo books and like really writing down what made you like excited when you were at different stages of your life, and then seeing if there's any patterns, because there will be. And you will, I've done this before where people will be like, oh my God, in grad school, I used to volunteer to do ABC or XYZ, and I don't have any of that now in my job. And I was like, but you could. You know, and so sometimes it's just about little things like that. So that's one. The other one is from the Design Your Life folks, where you spend a week kind of basically time tracking, but it's like, instead of time tracking what your tasks are, you're noticing on and writing it down when you feel like you're feeling excitement or passion or joy about something that you're doing. And then like looking back, like, what is that? How can that, could you build more of that in? Could you talk to your manager? Like if it's at work, could you be assigned more of that thing? Could you be shifted a little bit? So it doesn't even have to be a huge change. It could literally just be like really tuning in to what lights you up, as opposed to thinking that you have to just follow this job description or you have to just follow this prescription that somebody had for your life.
I love that. So, I love the idea of like a self-assessment, right? Like exploring one, your history, what if you've sort of lost touch with what lights you up, like what used to, and do those things still light you up? Maybe some of them you're like, meh, not so much anymore, but some of them may be like, oh my gosh, I used to love doing that. And maybe you incorporate it. And then I also love the like, through your days, like, are there pieces of the work you do or other things you spend your time on that are energizing and enlivening and invigorating? And I really think this is helpful because, as you're saying, it doesn't have to be a big overhaul. I think so often we might think like, I've got to throw this whole thing away, right? Like none of my life works. And I think when we're really emotional and upset, it's like, wow, you know, like everything's going to, you know, shit or whatever, right? Like it just feels like none of it's working. And the truth is, usually everything isn't falling apart. It may feel that way, but if you can sort of slow down, like process the emotions, give yourself a moment, vent to a friend, you know, like collect yourself, feel the feelings, and then take some time to reflect, like, well, what is working, right? Like, get curious about mm-hmm. what is working, not just what's not working, because, you know, that is going to give you clues into what mm-hmm. do you want to spend more time doing. And some of it may be like, yeah, like your friend who's like, yeah, I'm not super into my career, but it's good enough and it allows me to travel. It funds my travel. So that's what I'm doing, right?
That's
and,
right.
And so there's lots of different ways you can design or create your life, but you have to first spend the time to reflect and envision what it is that you want. And I think this, what we're sort of talking about with this like midlife period, or any time you get to where you're like, what I have been doing is not working, is that it's sort of this opportunity to reflect and reconsider what you want versus following the path that, you know, your family, society, whoever has set mm-hmm. forth for you and deciding, no, I want to go in this direction.
Right. And also like, and explicitly in terms of a partner or an employer asking for what you want. How can you ask for what you want? And I have people coming to me that are terrified. Like they kind of know. And it's not, and I'm like, you could totally ask for that. And then, you know, it takes a little while to work through that, right? Mm-hmm. But it is this thing of like first identifying what you want mm-hmm. and then having the courage to take some action toward that.
Yes.
And those are two different things, right? Like figuring it out and then acting.
Yeah.
And so I've been learning a lot about how to coach and help people in that second part in particular. Like mm-hmm. when I need to do something and I'm getting anxious and nervous about it, like what are some ways that I can calm myself down? What are some self-soothing tools that I can use in the moment. So mm-hmm. I've been learning a lot about as you were talking, I'm like, what lights me up is learning new things. So I've been taking a class on coaching and neuroscience and like,
I love it.
Training, like rewiring neural networks mm-hmm. and things like that. Mm-hmm. And that can be really effective in that courage and fear and, you know, so that when that comes up, because it's like, it's hard because you know, this is the thing that you're meant to do. This is the thing. And then you hit a roadblock because, I mean, it could be for many different reasons, but a lot of it is because we are socialized, especially as women, especially people of color, to not need anything.
Mm-hmm. Right.
To just go, just be quiet, do your thing and go on. So,
and it's, how could you ask for something, you know? Yeah, there's a dynamic of you should just be grateful to be here. How could you ask for a raise? How could you ask for, you know, that dynamic often plays out.
Right, to change your job description. Who are you to do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And
yeah, but I love that, the self-soothing and all of those pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to be here and to share your insights. I think they will be valuable for people who maybe are in midlife. And I also think they're valuable for people who are going through any life transition. And it's like, whoa, like what's this new phase of life and how am I going to navigate it? Right. And so I really appreciate you sharing your own experience and sharing some tools that people can use and come away with, which I think are incredibly valuable. So thank you so much, Julie.
It was such a fun conversation. This is also something that lights me up, talking to people about ideas like this, right? We're both, you know, nerds unite. We'll just say it that way.
Yes, yes.
Right?
I love it. Yes, absolutely. Aww,
thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
You're so welcome. And where can people find you, right? So if people are like, oh my gosh, what she's talking about is exactly where I'm at or where I need, or I need her to be my coach, like where can people find you and learn more about what you do?
So I think the best way to reach me is to email me at julie@julieartiscoaching.com. I think, Adia, you guys have that information.
Yes.
I also have a website. I'm just going to be switching it up a little bit. So that may be under construction. And I'm also on Instagram. I'm on LinkedIn. There should be links that these guys have. And I just started my own podcast last week. So I will hopefully be having a Dia on that podcast. And that's called Her Leading Story. And it's everywhere you can find podcasts. So it's been a really incredibly creative time for me. And I am just reflecting back on this conversation about how exciting it is to think through these things and to be of service.
Awesome.
To women and people who are in the midst of these kinds of transitions. So please reach out to me if you have any questions or want to have a conversation. I really appreciate being able to talk about everything that I'm passionate about on this podcast with you, Adia.
Yes, I love it. It's so good. And it is a service. I think it's really, really needed. And as we've discussed, like not talked about enough. So thank you. And I'm happy to help get the word out. And I appreciate
you. Thank you so
much. I appreciate you and your time.
Thank you. Take care.
Thanks for joining me this week on the Unconditionally Worthy podcast. Make sure to visit my website, dradiagooden.com, and subscribe to the show on iTunes so you'll never miss an episode. You can also follow me on social media at Dr. Adia Gooden. If you love the show, please leave a review on iTunes so we can continue to bring you amazing episodes. Lastly, if you found this episode helpful and know someone who might benefit from hearing it, please share it. Thanks for listening and see you next episode. This episode was produced by Chris and Tiana, and the music is by Wadaboy.